i dir-li que és un honor poder presentar des de la Càtedra de la Promoció de la Salut el professor Ben Bistrom, que ahir ja va estar aquí amb nosaltres doncs, per presentar un llibre, la guia de l'autoestopista salutogènic, que a mi fa la Promoció de la Salut, del qual n'és autor juntament amb l'editora Erickson. La producció d'aquest llibre, d'aquesta publicació, s'amarca en dues activitats de la càtedra, des de fer difusió del coneixement en el camp de la promoció de la salut. Sabem, els que són de fora, dir-los que la càtedra existeix des de l'any 2008, que és una unitat de la Universitat de Girona i que compta amb el suport de l'ICSALU, que és l'organisme autònom de la Diputació de Girona, amb el qual s'hi hagi sincerament per la seva col·laboració. El llibre que els he comentat que ahir vam presentar i que si tinc interès que si podrem fer arribar posteriorment, ens hauria agradat poder escriure-ho avui, però no, el temps ha estat encastat i justament hem pogut fer una edició de 20 exemplars bàsicament perquè se'ls pugui endur el professor Ternat a l'edició. Com deia, el llibre veuran que explica el concepte de contínuum salut-malaltia, donar una visió de salut positiva i no centrar-se en les malalties i les seves limitacions com estem acostumats. Pensem que en una jornada com aquesta, bé que proposéssim al professor doncs, perquè ens acompanyés en aquesta conferència inaugural, és important difondre una perspectiva salutogènica per tal de promoure un enfoc centrat en la salut i ajudar a ensenyar a les persones a com potenciar els recursos propis que tenim cadascú. Visió que compartim, evidentment, des de la Càtedra de Promoció de la Salut i considerem important doncs, de socialitzar-lo amb tots vostès. El professor Bistrom, dir-li que és doctor en salut pública, és pediatre de formació, es dedica també a la docència, és professor de promoció de la salut a l'Escola Nòrdica de Salut Pública, a Suècia, i a la Universitat de Bústria, a Noruega. Dirigeix un grup de treball mundial sobre salut agències en el marc de la Unió Internacional de Promoció i Educació de la Salut, que suposo que ens comentarà i ens explicarà i podrà facilitar doncs, la direcció perquè tingui més interès en conèixer les activitats que s'estan fent. També treballa en la recerca, com a lògic, i ho fa des del Centre d'Investigació Focalça de Facility a Pilar. I per tot això, pel seu treball, pel seu recorregut, és perquè ja hem considerat la persona doncs, que es pot ajudar a començar amb un peu al camí de socialització de posta al públic del treball d'una xarxa, en promoció de la salut, amb una universitat saludable i sense més dilació li donem la benvinguda i la paraula. Thank you, professor.
Does this work now? This speaker now. It's for the camera, okay. I'm no camera then, okay. Thank you very much for inviting me here and letting me be here today. And I arrived already yesterday and had the pleasure of seeing how efficiently the Department of Health Promotion at the Girona University is working. I presented the director in January with our new book research report on salutogenesis. It's called The Hitchhiker's Guide to Salutogenesis. And she said, well, maybe we could make it into Spanish. And today and yesterday, I saw the new book for the first time, a perfect translation. And she also surprised me by saying it is also made as an e-book. This is fantastic. And thinking about networking and what the dean said, the rector said before, and the coordinator said before about meeting the Spanish-speaking audience in Mexico and creating networks. In the world, Spanish is an important language, and Spanish is a big language. And I see that Girona will be a center for communicating what I'm going to say about salutogenesis and health promotion, not only in Spain. I already asked the other centers in Spain, and they said, yes, Girona will be what we look forward to. And the other thing is to look forward to Latin America and the Spanish-speaking region, not forgetting the rest of the world. I made a title today, A Reflection on Public Health and Health Promotion Through Salutogenic Lenses. I'll put the salutogenic lenses on now. And if you see this image here with the shell of the egg, it's a broken egg. And I shall start by saying, sometimes you start your life like a broken egg, but you can feel life is complete and perfect. Sometimes you start life with a complete egg, and still you cannot feel that life is complete. I show you a few pictures of a friend of mine who, at the age of 19, she was born without arms and just one leg, and she has become a very capable person. She can live on her own. In fact, she entered the university after going through school, and she can actually perform and do whatever she wants in life. Here, doing the ordinary thing of washing yourself in the morning, also cleaning your teeth. I will put this forward a little. And just thinking about what is needed to have such a capacity to go through life. What is needed to have this ability? The question is it a question of a fantastic individual? Is it a question of a work between the closest social network, the family, and the individual? Or is it even a bigger question? Is it a question of a society having thoughts about what should be possible? Usually we put limits to people, but I tell you, when I see Elena Maria, the sky is the roof for her. I put her forward a little. As a teenager and a woman, she wants to make herself pretty with makeup and make your hair. She lives on her own and has her own kitchen and is able to perform. At this time, she says, well, it would be good to have arms, but on the other hand, if I had arms, I could make two stitchings at the same time. But on the other hand, I was born like this. I don't want to change. This is me, and this is what I want to be. Of course, as a disabled person, if we can call her that, transportation in community is important. Of course, she drives a car. And just thinking about who would actually need a car, a transportation like this, where you, as an individual with a disability, can move around the society, it is exactly this group who would need it. So I give you an image of what is possible. Then we can, of course, think how this can be accomplished and how this can be done. So Lena Maria, thank you. She is 40 years old now, but I can't tell her full life story here. So I have to go back to my own boring story. You already presented me. I'm a pediatrician. I do research, and I'm working in Helsinki right now. And my little brainchild is this IUHB Global Working Group on Salutogenesis, which is what I'm doing today and what I'm promoting today on the global level. And right now, there's a Spanish network being born. Again, the whole egg and the broken egg and the wholeness and the feeling of wholeness is perhaps the most important thing I can say. How do you get things to hang together and stay together? public health and health promotion and health. What are these? And what are these through what I'm going to say, salutogenic lenses? Do I speak too fast? I asked the interpreter, is it okay? Can you follow me? Or am I too quick? Okay. Health, of course, there's a definition to health. And we can already think a definition that comes from 1948. Is it a good definition today? The definition is, you can of course have a look at what we said said 50 years ago, and we were saying that health is not only the absence of disease, and here is the point where it's the absence of disease, but it's a state of complete well-being in three dimensions. And only when you get to the top of this sort of thing, you have a complete health. So WHO says health is only achieved when you are at this point. Having I'll get it back. There we are. Now, this is a meanie today. Okay, let's leave it at that. Only when you get to this very, very point here, you can have health. And then, first of all, you have to leave the sort of disease sector. You have a full, you need to have a full physical, social, and mental well-being. And you can of course say this is perhaps not the best definition. And I can immediately say, according to this definition, Lena Maria, who I showed a little while ago, she doesn't have health according to WHO, because there's a fundamental difficulty with this definition. If you have disease at one end and non-disease at the other end, okay, I can accept that as the medical spectrum. But you can, as you saw with Lena Maria, you can have a state of complete well-being at any point in the spectra of disease and non-disease. Lena Maria is probably somewhere in between because she has a disability. So, but still, she is able to experience and feel that life is perfect in physical, mental, and spiritual dimension. Although she's not in the middle, on top of the sort of health or health disease spectra. And this makes it difficult to define health, which means I will move on and say we need a different definition, and we are fighting for a new definition. I'm playing around with words, and this is what I would say today health would be. You have to think about it. Health is what it takes to make life worth living. I left the health concept a long time ago because I realized, talking to persons like Lena Maria and people with severe disease, and they told me life is perfect. So I left the concept of health and thought about what makes life worth living, and ended up with a discussion about quality of life. And I made my thesis on quality of life. So quality of life is perhaps a more important thing. Now I don't only speak about the individual quality of life, but what would be the quality of life of the Spanish society? What would be the collective quality of life? Can you measure that? You can measure that, but that's an interesting question. Individual is important, but how do you make it a collective sort of word? Public health has a definition. The science and art of societies organize efforts to prevent disease, promote health, and prolong life. This is also a rather old definition today. I usually, when I talk about this, I say, well, it's like public health is like a bird of prey, a hawk flying over the earth like this and looking down at earth. And from this point, you can see a lot. You can see the trees and you can see the forests. And what public health does is that it is up here and it has this broad perspective looking at earth. And usually it is comparing people standing here with people who are standing here and say, well, there are differences between these two groups. And it's a nice and perfect point to look at the earth. But there's a danger. When you start looking at people from distance, they all of a sudden become numbers, and they become formulas or something, and all of a sudden you have lost contact with a human being. And if I use the example of a bird of prey, because you know this bird is out to hunt mouse or whatever animal running here on the earth, and they pick out the weakest one and eat it up, get food. And sometimes I feel public health is like a bird of prey. They think they are allowed to take out the weakest one. For instance, if Lena Maria was born, or a mother in Finland would be pregnant with a girl like Lena Maria today, the medical system and the healthcare system would recommend an abortion. And when we recommend an abortion, that means go get an abortion in Finland. So she would never be born in Finland today. And you can start thinking about what kind of world we perhaps are creating. The worst example historically is, of course, what the Nazis did in the 30s and 40s in Europe, completely saying there are no human rights and going beyond human rights. Okay, so that much about public health. Okay, now I got to the start again. You know, I hardly ever use PowerPoints. I try to be polite today and use PowerPoints. The sort of thought of, first of all, the medical field, trying to cure people who are in trouble, getting them out of the risk of dying, curing disease, and then the whole thought about health, public health, is actually an understanding how to protect people, how to prevent people from risks and disease, how to educate people to avoid risks and disease, and then moving up, and then we have something called health promotion on the top. But basically, up to health promotion, all thoughts about what health is related to what we understand about disease and risks. So we have built our understanding of health from understanding disease and death. So our health concept is related to risk and disease. And I think it's a very, very limited way of looking at health. WHO does the same thing, and in principle the whole world thinks in the same terms. Health promotion again. What is that? First of all, there is a principle statement from 1986 saying that health promotion is the, I play around with the genetic code, health promotion is the process enabling people to gain control over their health determinants, thereby improving their health and giving them an opportunity to live an active and productive life. So I put a genetic code on a gene like his, and this is just a joke, because if I put the text on this and say, well, you have to understand the sequence of these words, and look at this, yes, you understand, like the human genome, it makes no sense at all, unless you understand what it means. And I think that is important, because what happened to health promotion when it came around, you had this wonderful idea of what health promotion is. I'll make this a little bit bigger, health promotion is, let's have a different background. Yeah, I want blue now, because I'm going to talk about animals in the sea. We had a wonderful idea about what health promotion is. We made a principal statement like the one, and we made a wonderful model of it. We took the model of the Nautilus and put the principles of health promotion into the shell of the Nautilus. You know, the Nautilus is a octopus or pentapus with five arms. And in fact, when you look at the Ottawa Charter, which is the basis of it, you had the principles which are called the genetic codes, which should be in the head of this octopus. The principles, the way we should think, the way we should act when we work health promotion. And then we had five action areas, like the one we are talking about today, which is health promoting settings. We had changing the healthcare system into, we had community action, we had changing the individual health behavior. 1, 2, 3, 4. There's the fifth arm. I always forget what the fifth arm is about. But the idea was you have a way of thinking, which is in the genetic code, and then you have 5 action areas. What happened in practice was that I put the eyes on the animal also because the animal sees here. What happened in reality was that we forgot what the head thought, and we continued like before, working with individual health behavior, working with individuals, not settings, working with the healthcare system at before, and so on. And in fact, the arms walked away in their own direction and left the head behind, which was not the primary idea. And we lost, in fact, a lot for health promotion. Basically for 2 things. Okay, the principles were there, we'd induced them because we had ideas from before. And the second thing is that health promotion had no real theoretical background, which made it a complicated area. I leave the octopus there. Now I'll try to go back to this from this slide. Well, here you have again, here you have the values and principles nicely written, and this is supposed to be the shell of the Nautilus, and the 5 action areas like this. The 5th action area is probably the most important one. It's the one building healthy public policies. And that is bringing the whole thing together. What you should be able to do if you are a dean, a director, if you lead a region for public health and health promotion, you should be able, together with the politicians and society, create a policy for society that is healthy, has a healthy direction. This is probably the most important. The other ones are also really important. But as I said, we lost the momentum because we didn't think. We lost the values and principles. Again, settings approach, which is the one which is focused on in the health promoting universities project, is talking about supportive environments and strengthening community action. The community being here, the people who are working inside and with the university. But this is one of the most successful strategies in health promotion. I said healthy public policy would probably be the most important one, but we haven't been very good at that. But health promoting settings we have been good at, especially health promoting hospitals. Health promoting cities has been the big one. And the other one has been health promoting schools. These 2 big projects are the largest one in health promotion and rather successful. Still. And then we have smaller projects like health promoting hospitals, like health promoting prisons, which is an interesting thought. Health promoting prisons. What the hell can you do with health in a prison? A lot, I tell you. And health promoting university is a rather new, it has been for several years, but it has sort of been evolving and coming. It's a project with a future. Again, back to the genetic code. What are we really saying in the genetic code? We are talking about the human being, and health promotion is the process of enabling people to gain control over the health determinants. Health determinants are factors that steer our health. And there are, of course, factors when we are born: genetic, social, economic, we can say political, traditional, and culture factors that steer us, and we have with us in our rucksack when we start life. This is the start of life. Then we are in a process throughout life where we develop health. And throughout life, we have life experience, positive and negative life experience, we learn, and all of this ends up in our life rucksack. And then the process we are involved in is in fact, looking at a phenomena we have to solve. We can say it's a health problem or a health phenomena important to health. And what we do, we look back in our rucksack and see, do I have a way of solving it? What do I have packed in my rucksack? What do I have have of ideas? And if I don't have it, do I have it in the people around myself? So it's only, not only me, but it's the things around myself, the setting. And can I have help from there? And then I try to solve it. I might succeed. I'm happy. I get a plus in the book. I might not have a success. The negative experience also goes here. And what we many times forget, a negative experience can be positive in the long run, because the next time we face a similar problem, we failed the previous time, but this time, because we know we failed, probably the next time we will be able to solve it. So both negative and positive experiences can be good. And the process is aiming at, in WHO's terms, to have an active or productive life. I'll translate this immediately. What do you want with your life? You want a good life. And that means in classic Greek philosophy, the same as quality of life. So the aim of the health process is getting a good quality of life. So that's why I say health is what it takes to make life worth living. Life is worth living. This is here. And health is what it takes to be able to deal with these processes, many processes here. So now, do you understand the genetic code? I tried to explain it with a picture. Well, if you read the book, the book in Spanish now, you can get the whole story there. We have tried to put it there in a simple, clear way, and also put in the evidence of it. Again, now moving from salute, from health promotion and public health, I put the glasses on and say, okay, what does the salutogenesis say? In principle, salutogenesis says it's important to see what mechanism moves us towards the positive end of the health spectrum. Health is not absolute in my terms. As I said when I showed the WHO, there's a mistake that they say it has to be absolute. Health is relative on a spectra from no health at all to a lot of health. And what salutogenesis say, the important thing is to find out what makes us move in this direction, in the salutogenic, the health promoting or health producing direction. And the theory came from stress theory, where Aaron Tversky said there are stressors everywhere in our life, and we every minute, every second we face stressors that put us under tension. And then we try to solve this, and if we succeed, we move in the salutogenic direction. If not, we load up with something pathogenic. It doesn't need to, it has to lead to a breakdown, but it can load us up. But basically, the important thing would be to think how to move in this direction. All of you are somewhere on this spectra in your health dimension. And I could make this even more complicated and say, It's not only a question of health. Let's see. Okay, this is too crowded. I'll take a new one. There, and make it bigger and home, and then we take the brush. Because you can talk about the three dimensions I'm talking about are disease, and the other end is non-disease. Then we can talk about health and no health in the other hand. And then we can talk about quality of life. It's difficult with the mouse. And non-quality of life. Okay, whatever. And what we usually think, if you don't have disease, you will have a lot of health and quality of life. But it can be just as well like this. You have a lot of disease, and you have no health, but you have a good quality of life. And you can have disease and health and very little quality of life. So you can combine these in any way. And all of you are somewhere here. None of you are completely sort of without disease. You have maybe, I say, I'm something over there. Maybe on health point, I'm over here. Maybe on quality of life point, I'm over here. So my spectra would be something like this. And we can put all people in the world on these kind of spectras. And all the time I say, what would be important would be find out how you can actually improve health and quality of life in order to be able to make the sort of disease spectrum as with as low importance as possible. Okay, I speak here as a medical doctor, maybe contradicting my own classical knowledge of health, but I'll move on now. But I hope this does make sense to you. No, I have to put it up with my hand like this. We were from this slide. Again, seeing this once more, and you can always think about it. And I tell you, it took me many years to get the understanding of health promotion into my head. I was lucky because I entered health promotion through the understanding of quality of life, which made me understand that this end, and it's more than just health that is involved here. I have tried to put this into a very simple logic. Most of the time we say, it's so complicated, it's so complex, it's difficult and it's so big and so hard to understand. And I try to put it very simply, say, well, health promotion, according to WHO, the Ottawa Charter, and the principles, is equal to achieving a good quality of life. This is the aim. And to achieve and to understand what quality of life is, we can discuss it forever, philosophically and so on. Quality of life is actually something you as the one who is involved, decide yourself. But how to achieve quality of life, that's where we have salutogenesis as a mechanism that can lead to a quality, that gives us the possibility to move in that direction. I put these two letters at the end, HR, which stands for human rights. And when I say that, I actually use the Convention of the Rights of the Child, which is the most modern version of human rights, where they say the human being is an active participating subject. This is in fact important. Active in her own life, participating, involved in decisions about life, and a subject, a person who has a right to be involved in this. So this is a very simple way of putting this formula. And you can act on any arena in health with just these, in fact, 1, 2, 3, 4 letters. Again, I'm saying, without human rights, it's no use to do this at all. We have to have the human right at the core, which in fact was the idea when the United Nations and when the World Health Organization was formed. Human rights are actually at the core, and we defend health in the world. We defend human rights in the world through health when we work with the health issue. And there are two directions of health. One is the classical one, where we know the causes of death and disease and we are fighting risks. This is what the medical field, this is what most of the public health field. The other direction is the direction I've tried to talk about here. Explore causes of health. Explore the salutogenic factors, finding reasons for living and quality of life. And the mechanism that gets you going in this direction is, in salutogenic term, your sense of coherence. And we are trying to find what are the determinants of sense of coherence. But it's two spectra. Now I go back to the original. You saw the river with protection and prevention from before. But now I made a difference. That river was flowing down here towards death and disease. Now I say we should not relate health only to death and disease. We should relate health to life. And why don't we say that the river is the river of life and flows in this direction? And what is important here is the river runs like this. All of us are floating somewhere in this river. We are facing risks, of course. Risks are everywhere. We may be hit by a risk and have a bad day, but again, then we may perhaps find our way back in this direction. There are also resources here, and we should be able to understand what are the important resources for us to go in this direction. And this is the salutogenic direction that leads to good quality of life, well-being. And this is the discussion I would like to see much more in the discussion of health, public health promotion. I also put Antonovsky's health, this spectra of low health, high health here, to say that, you know, we can be anywhere here, but the idea is that we in life learn how to move in a stronger direction all the time. This would be sort of my idea. This is the theoretical part of it. Do we have any evidence that this would work? That's another story. And now I can jump into conclusions. If I look what we have done in this book and what we have done in Helsinki, we have looked at the salutogenic research on the global level, all the research that has been done since the story started. We put it together and analyzed it, and what we get as a story. The ability to use your health resources is what we call sense of coherence. Ability to use the resources you have around yourself as an individual, as a group, as a hospital, as a university, as a society. And what we see that throughout the life perspective, the mean, if you put all the studies done in the world together, the mean value of this sense of coherence is increasing with age, which means that the older you get, the better you are at actually managing life, which means that a group in society that always forget, the oldest, are probably the wisest. They know the best about society. And that's one thing we should think about. And if you have been around in the area of health and public health, you remember the Health for All strategy by the year 2000 by WHO. It came in 1984. And they had two slogans, adding years to life. That means we want to have a population that live long. And the other thing, that is not enough. We also want a population that have a good life. And that is adding life to years. These two words are quite good to remember. They are easy to remember. They don't make it complex. But if we look at people with a strong salutogenic capacity, a strong sense of coherence, they live longer, in principle, compared to other people. They also have, as an outcome of well-being, they have good mental health, they have good perceived health, and good quality of life. We have very, very strong correlation to these three dimensions, mental health and quality of life and perceived health. And if we look at a classic problem that we many, many times spend a lot of stupid energy on, that is negative health behavior. If a person develops a strong sense of coherence, they will be inclined to use constructive, positive health behavior. If a family has a strong sense of coherence, their children are more inclined to use positive health behaviors, which is interesting. It tells us that the coherence between family and child, the interlink between, is important for the development of health. And at the same way, we can say a university that has an idea, we wanted to create a good learning and a good social life within the university, a good context for learning, a good ethos in this direction. That kind of university will produce good students. I come from a country that, when it comes to basic school, Finland, we are number one in the world. You see the PISA studies, yes, we are number one. And one thing is, when people come to school, we say, you come to school to learn. The ethos of the school is to learn. And we are good at that. We are very effective at that. The other thing we are missing, we are not having a school where young children thrive. They don't feel good in school. They feel better and better, but we have lost part of that part. So today I say we should think in terms of not only being effective of getting people to learn, but also being able to make them feel healthy and enjoy when they learn. We have just published an article which is talking about healthy learning, like healthy public policy. The way you do it in the school, the way you do it in the university, is perhaps more important for the learning itself if you do it in the right way. I joke and say, you know, it's like the French. They said, you can say whatever you want as long as you pronounce it correctly. And I said, health promotion, you have to, in fact, do it the right way. and the right way of thinking. I'm not saying normatively right. There are sort of principles you should follow and make true in what you're doing. So this was a long story. But health behavior, we can deal with this. Stress management, people with a strong sense of coherence manage stress better. And also, if they encompass negative life events, they do better with this. And this is an interesting, which will be in the nearest years, the big story of public health and health promotion. What do we do with these chronic big diseases like diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and chronic lung diseases and mental disorders? These are the ones that shorten lives all over the world, increasing. These are the ones that give us the heaviest disease burden. And interesting enough, if we look at people who have developed a strong salutogenic capacity or strong sense of coherence, they manage better if they get a chronic disease. Finally, the whole picture, there's one thing missing. What would be the economic consequences if we would implement this? I say today, I can say, if we are able in a society to develop good health promotion and people, systems with a strong sense of coherence, we will have all these wonderful outcomes. And just think about it, what it would mean economically if we have a population that lives long. Well, that can cost a lot for society, but if we have a population that lives long and feel good, that's a different story. And if we still have people who do not do too much negative health behaviors, do manage stress well, and do manage this chronic disease as well, we have a completely different story. Think about the economic impact. We have calculated just one of these issues in Finland. It comes to workplaces and people who do not thrive in work and go on early retirement. It's very expensive for society. We have calculated in Finland that this cost as much, if we would eliminate this problem, the rest of the population would only have to work 4 days a week. That much it costs. And when we look at this phenomena and look at strong sense of coherence, the people with strong sense of coherence are the ones who manage to come back to work and do not sort of fall out early. So again, there we have a positive story. Now I have become so enthusiastic, I will never stop to talk. I don't have a watch. I have to find out what time it is. Again, now think about the inside of sense of coherence. What creates sense of coherence? And what we see from the global research, it's more a psycho-emotional climate. Again, reflecting back on the learning environment in a university, if the university can create a psycho-emotional climate conducive to learning, you will have a completely different story. How can we make so that people who come into a university say, wow, this is a place where I want to be, this is a place where I want to learn, and look at all these people who are here and want to help me to develop my learning. And already early studies said it was about being in contact with yourself on the individual level, having good intimate relationship, having strong social support, being involved in meaningful activities. You come to the university to learn. It's meaningful for you. And also having a reflection on life as a whole, the existential part of it. And also the other side of it is from, I know you were leaving early. I thank you for your speech today. It's the director leaving. Thank you. He told me in advance. It's very nice when people say in advance, so you're not getting completely bored. I put out the lights. I talk about the inner dimension. These are the mechanisms that are important for you to develop. But the other side is the outer. How do you as an individual hang together with the big system? And this is the political socioeconomic dimension, which we are also involved in public health, reduction of inequity and bridging the gap. And are they like the hen and the egg? What we see is that if you develop a strong sense of coherence, it acts on both. And we can think about something in the future. How do we create a collective sense of coherence? How do you create a society that goes... Now I could stop and say, I know that one of the most destructive societies in the world had a very strong sense of coherence internally. And now I'm talking about the Nazi German. The Germans living in the Nazi system thought they were the best in the world, and in the system they had the strongest sense of coherence. But, so I say, sense of coherence is not enough unless you combine it the human rights. That human rights has to be combined. If Nazi Germany had, as a second thought, worked with human rights, it would be in a different society. But they were completely against it, and it created the most horrible situations we ever seen in the world. These systems, totalitarian systems, there were many such systems at that time of the world. There are some in society still. Again, back to reality. Now I've talked a lot about this sort of positive side of health, about resources, health promotion, and salutogenesis, how they are influence are important for health. But one should not forget that we at the same time need to know what creates ill health, what are the risk factors, and so on. And only having both of them at the same time, we will get, this is what the empirical study says, you need both. Otherwise, you need both sides. Otherwise, you are lost. I could challenge and say, maybe if somebody would even try to work only on this side, maybe you would be more successful than working only on that side. I probably would be more successful with only this side. But that's it as a challenge. Today we have, in fact, societies who are thinking in terms of this positive side. We have one society, Bhutan, of all countries in the world, have a positive a happiness, collective happiness index to measure the quality of the society. And Norway, one of the richest societies and the most integrated societies in the world, is in fact discussing how could we create a collective quality of life for the society and how could you measure it. Quality of life will be the future of health. So health is only the vehicle that leads to a high quality of life. Now, making it a bit broader, when I say salutogenesis, I say it is theoretical frameworks that talk about how do you create resources for health, how do you create the ability to use your resources. WHO uses this, the term asset approach. I use the resource approach. Asset is more a sort of management term. But there are many theories, but the one we know the most about and the one we have the best evidence of is sense of coherence. So what we are doing today is when we take a new concept in here, all of this we have not been able to study, but one you maybe know is resilience. Resilience we have compared to sense of coherence and looked at how they work together. Empowerment we are involved in right now. Some of the key words here, but look at here, all of this word. Have you ever heard about learned resourcefulness and learned optimism? The man who's dealing with learned optimism today started his psychological studies by talking about learned pessimism, and now he's turned the wheel around. Positive mental health is a big thing today. And my final word is, if you are dealing with health promotion and public health and medicine, beware of the new kids on the block. Salutogenesis is coming around the corner, and it's coming strongly. Girona will be the leader in Spain, and you will have other centers in the rest of the world, and we will work together, and we will work together with public health, we work together with medicine. We'll make a better world. And thank you very much. I think I went a bit over time. I've stolen your time, and I tell you, you can never get it back.
Moltes gràcies, professor Wistrom, per la seva intervenció. Em penso que, com hem dit al principi, és una reflexió que pot ser molt útil i des d'una perspectiva de diferent a la que tots hem estat formats i entrenats i treballats. I bé, per acabar aquesta primera part, anem bastant bé de temps. Podríem deixar, si volguéssim, un parell o tres intervencions, perquè jo vull fer un comentari.
No. No question. What I tell you, I have been talking too much, one thing. The other thing, it's not the thing, salutogenesis, not you learn like this. I used the title is for fun, hitchhiking. You can't hitchhike into this area. It's something that gets integrated into something to learn and something that becomes a way of living and a way of thinking, a way of acting. And it does take time. If this is new, don't be surprised, don't be overset. Read the book. I tell you, it's an easy introduction. It's an easy introduction, therefore hitchhiking, but the whole story takes more time to get into fundament. But once it's there, watch out, you will never get out of that. You will never get out of it.
Doncs parem aquí, podem anar a fer una pausa i tot seguit a mitja, doncs que emprenem la sessió. Moltes gràcies.